everybody. Ray Lucchese here with Howard Marks online as well. Welcome to our 28th episode of Graybeards on Storage, which was recorded on December 29, 2015. This is our annual year-end podcast, so it's just a Howard and Ray show talking about latest news and trends in the industry today. If you were with us here last year for our year-end podcast, you know that that was a video recording. We tried to do another video for this year, but had technical difficulties, so we're unable to make another one. Nonetheless, we did get a good audio and are going with that for our year-end podcast, so on with the show.
It's been an exciting year. The storage business isn't the snorage that my editors at Network Computing always accused it of being. Many things are going on. So let's start with Merry Christmas, Ray. How are you doing down there?
Merry Christmas, Howard. I'm good. How are you doing over there?
I'm doing well. You're in the southern
Florida
graybeard White House.
Yeah, really.
Here in sunny Santa Fe, it's not so sunny. We're getting some snow.
Yeah,
so.
Well, that's good. Well, you guys need moisture and stuff like that.
Oh, we do. I'm really glad to have El Nino blowing snow down this far south.
Yeah, really. Well, that's good. God, the storage business has been real exciting this year. And consolidation stuff, we were just talking a little bit about what was going on the consolidation side of things. Obviously, the big news is the NetApp SolidFire acquisition, but that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg, as it were.
Yeah, curiously, the 800-pound gorilla in the room is, of course, Dell acquiring EMC.
Yeah.
You know, that also takes EMC out of the market as a buyer, at least temporarily.
Yeah, you would think, until they get their cash flow back up there.
Dell is planning on using a bunch of the cash EMC has on hand to finance the deal.
Yeah.
You know, it just...
If anything, it might
it
spin off.
It doesn't close till October.
Yeah.
And so it's just, those guys are so busy just dealing with the stuff they have to do.
Right.
That the thought of, oh yeah, while we're at it, we'll acquire somebody doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
The other question is, what's left for EMC to buy? They've got just about everything in the industry anymore. I mean,
that's actually the part of this consolidation round I'm finding a tiny bit surprising, that all the big guys have a product in every category.
Right, right.
We can argue about whether a Nimble or a Tintree hybrid system uses flash more effectively
than
a VNX or an FAS.
Right.
Because those were disk systems and flash had to get added to them.
Yeah.
But the truth is that flash got added to them 6 years ago.
So they've done pretty good in the last 6 years.
And three software revisions.
Yeah.
And so the difference is not qualitative, it's just quantitative.
Yeah.
It's, you know, this is 20% better, maybe.
Maybe.
And so I had thought that we weren't going to see acquisitions like the recently announced acquisition of SolidFire by NetApp, because NetApp already had three all-flash solutions.
Yeah.
Now, you know, the EF was, we took the Infinio, we pulled all the SSDs out, pulled all the spinning disks
out.
We put in SSDs, look, it's fast.
And then we spun up the data path a bit, stuff like that.
Yeah, but you know, that was... You know, that was kind of the shoehorn method.
Yeah.
And I've had my complaints about how FAS uses flash. But,
yeah.
You know, again, it's not qualitatively different. It's just better or worse in a little bit.
Yeah.
And then they had FlashRay, which was supposed to be the best thing since sliced bread, though nobody ever told us any details.
Yeah. Well, there were some details early on, but then they kind of went quiet. And then it hadn't been really broadcast since then. I think the SolidFire is a slightly a different play to some extent, because I think I see the biggest threat to the storage industry not being the startups per se, as much as it's the migration to the cloud for applications, compute, and storage.
It's the huge reduction in initial demand.
Yeah, data growth is longer.
Just like, okay, you know, look, we both essentially run startups.
Right.
You know, we're not new, but we run small businesses.
Yeah, small businesses are better.
Today, if I was starting a company, I would use QuickBooks Online.
Office Online.
And Office 365 and Salesforce. And so I wouldn't have the Exchange server and I wouldn't have the SQL server that ran my accounting application. And I wouldn't have a CRM. And so all of that demand, which, you know, for the small business is not the kind of thing that the big storage guys really impact VNXE doesn't really impact CMC's bottom line.
It's a starter drug, though. I mean, the thing is, right. Once you get down that path.
But it means once I get to be 200 employees,
yes.
I still won't have that stuff.
Yeah.
And if I'm and just looking at Salesforce, you know, you start going, even big companies are using applications like Salesforce. And so there's big applications that are no longer in-house. The cloud guys, even if they use modern, you know, Salesforce uses conventional systems.
Right, right.
You know, the truth is that's a service, what we used to call in the old days, a service bureau.
Right.
They run an application. Right. It could have a VMAX, you don't know.
Yeah.
But even if the big guys are selling standard storage to Salesforce, Salesforce is running at a much higher utilization because it's their core business.
Right.
And so they're managing it closer. They're not going, well, this is VDI, and
the rule book
best
says.
Practice says VDI should have dedicated storage, so I'm going to have an island of storage at 50% utilization for this,
right.
and another one at 50% utilization for that. So all that drives demand down for traditional storage.
Yeah.
Now, SolidFire, because they went out to chase the solution provider market immediately, you know, they've got functionality and features that make that system a lot more attractive than a VMAX.
Right.
If you're going to be running, especially private cloud, where you have no real, you know, Salesforce knows what their customers are doing.
Right.
They're running Salesforce. They understand that application.
Right.
AWS, or, you know, more significantly,
Azure,
the next level down.
Yeah. Rackspace, those guys.
The guys who have 100,000 servers, not a million servers. But if you're the guys who have 100,000 servers and you're selling, you know, spin up a VM on demand, you have no idea what your users are doing. And the normal methods for capacity planning don't work. So
anymore,
you just go, here, I'll use QoS.
Right.
I'll sell them. I will say you're buying X and I will deliver X and I'll use QoS to make sure that I always deliver X.
Right.
And what you use it for isn't my problem.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that of the all flash folks, that somebody bought SolidFire, which addresses a different market in which the old big iron guys should have been less successful.
Right.
Than to say, oh, I bought Pure, which is a really good implementation of an all-flash Clarion.
Yeah.
No, but conceptually, it's still a dual controller module.
NetApp has always done fairly well with service providers anyways. It seemed like it was a...
I always found that interesting.
You know, right? I mean, they had Terramark and a couple other huge guys.
The Amazons and Azures are like, okay, so we'll cobble this thing together and write our own software-defined storage.
Yeah.
And the guys in the middle, like Terramark, were going, yeah, we know how to run a NetApp. We'll get another NetApp.
Yeah. So, I mean, SolidFire is, I guess, almost a play to some of their strength, but it's a different game. I mean,
the whole deal is interesting. You know, NetApp has a checkered history at best at doing acquisitions.
It's been a challenge in the past for them, that's for sure. And they've done some that worked and some that didn't work. Yeah.
Spinnaker, they decided to integrate into the core of ONTAP.
Which took a long time.
Which took a lot longer than they thought it was going to.
Yes.
But I'll put Spinnaker down as a success.
Yeah, because they did take the functionality out and rolled it out to the world, right? Into their best product line.
Yeah, and you know, and they're having trouble with people going, no, I don't want to go to the future. I don't need scale out.
Yeah, well.
But yeah, this always happens. I remember when I was at BBDO, we took the last, you remember the original Macs?
Yes. The boxes.
So we took, the little vertical stand-up ones with the 9-inch screen.
Yeah, I like that. I have those.
We took the last SE30, the last Mac in that form factor off someone's desk, and they literally were crying. that we put, you know, a new
iMac,
10 times as powerful Mac on their desk.
Yeah.
But, you know, this one was cute and they liked it.
Yeah.
So there's always people who are going to complain, and, you know, getting your users to adopt something new is always hard.
Right.
But I can't think of another acquisition that NetApp's done that I would call a success.
I think the LSI thing has been a success. I mean, it's been segregated, separated, but they continue to milk that. You know?
Ingenio, but that was also Gorgon's ran Ingenio at LSI.
Right, so he knew what he was getting into.
And so he knew exactly what he was buying.
Right.
And that OEM business hasn't been doing so good.
Yeah.
You know, IBM dropped him.
Right, right.
God knows what's going to happen with Dell.
Right, when that plays out.
If you're Dell, do you still want to sell MDs?
Probably
when
not.
When a VNXE is the same fact, cogs?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And you're owning it and stuff like
and, that. And it's your tech.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, and you're not supporting a competitor.
Right, right.
You know, it was one thing when it was LSI and, you know, you bought RAID controllers and MD arrays from them.
Right.
It's another thing when it's NetApp. And you're meeting them in the sales channel.
Right, right, right.
You know, not that, you know, any of your valuable sales guys care about an MD, but still.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, they bought, you know, one of the CDP companies.
Yeah,
And stuff just disappeared. They bought, and I'm forgetting the names of the vendors,
right.
But, you know, they bought.
Bycast and
They bought Bycast and that. Yeah, and that's now. Another thing the sales guys will sell you if you express interest in object storage,
right.
But they're not using it, addressing it strongly enough that when you think about object storage, you think about Bycast.
Yeah, or a storage grid. In
or a storage and, grid, or,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, whatever it is.
It's kind of like, you know, you say, oh, name some object storage vendors.
Yeah.
And that's like the seventh or eighth one that comes to mind, if it comes to mind at all. They bought the vendor of Fiber Channel encryption, and then that market collapsed 6 months later, so they closed it.
So the SolidFire thing is very interesting. Obviously, they've got a lot of overlap, I would say, but SolidFire has been making a lot of ends in that service provider market, which is
right. Well, there's overlap, but there are clear reasons. You know, if there are clear reasons to maintain All Flash FAS and SolidFire as separate products.
Right.
You know, they do overlap, but there are people who want scale out and there are people who don't.
Yeah, yeah.
There are people who want the QoS and there are people who want all of the other stuff that comes from having a 20-year-old platform with functions for everything.
Right.
So it's not like there were rumors before the announcement came out that EMC was going to buy SolidFire.
Don't understand that. Yeah.
Well, you know, just like buying SolidFire is an admission by NetApp that FlashArray wasn't going to solve all their problems,
right.
EMC buying SolidFire would have been an admission that Extreme.io is an ugly baby.
Yeah.
And I don't think Extreme.io is an ugly baby to that extent.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
I find it odd that, you know, you got to scale out architecture, but you have to have an even number of nodes.
Right, right.
But, you know,
minor tweaks. I'm thinking.
And it's EMC who can address problems like that with financial engineering.
Right.
And say, oh, you want five?
Well, you
can't have five. We'll give you six. Pay for five.
Yeah, and when you need the other one.
When you use the first byte of the sixth one, we'll send you the bill.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you're a big company, you can solve problems that way.
Yeah, there are many, many alternatives here to solve problems like that. You know, obviously, there's probably more consolidation going on in the business over time. Startups are still emerging. You know, we're still talking to startups, the storage field day, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, it's just astounding how the flow of new startups over the past few years just keeps coming.
Yes.
Like, oh, look, this year we got Cohesity and Rubrik and Hedvig.
Right.
Just like, oh, look, yeah, more of this stuff.
Right,
right.
Right.
Cool.
And I'm predicting another three startups next year coming out.
Oh, no,
at least.
I'm already talking to some of them.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, I have a web robot that searches places like theglobes.il, which is the Israeli equivalent to the Wall Street Journal.
Okay, yeah.
Because there's announcements of startups there. Yeah. It's like, oh, these guys are doing interesting things. I speak enough Hebrew to say hello. Yeah.
Well, you need to ship me that tool then. That's an Yeah, so there's a lot of technology going on, too. Software-defined storage still is a hot topic, still doing better, still scaling higher, still becoming more capable.
Yeah, well, you know, Moore's Law has been very kind to software-defined storage.
Oh, yeah.
It's like faster and faster Xeons. Oh, good.
Yeah,
I mean, because you and I go back to where it was like, well, there's the, you know, I need to do Xor fast.
Right.
The Intel 960 processor doesn't do anything well except Xor.
We'll take it.
Well, we'll put that on the RAID controller. Right, that's what we need.
Right. And using Power 1, and, Power 2 for the rest of the world, you know.
And yeah, and then the main processor's a MIPS.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, 3PAR is built on the fact that, you know, they got stuff to work in an ASIC.
Right.
That back when they got it to work in an ASIC, you couldn't do with the main processor.
Right.
And today, there's very little you can't do with that x86.
Right.
And as we move to scale-out architectures, I can throw a lot of x86 cores at this.
Yeah.
So if I write my code really multi-threaded, there's a lot I can do.
Right.
I saw an article just yesterday, Intel bought one of the leading FPGA manufacturers. And they're going to come out with a line of processors specifically for embedded applications like storage controllers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's going to be a Xeon and
FPGA. So a Xeon
well,
Logic.
It's a Xeon with an with a programmable section. So you can do an FPGA built into the Xeon and then...
Yeah.
Plug it into the standard socket and not have to do the rest of the motherboard design.
Right, right.
That if you were using an FPGA, it's not just programming the FPGA.
Right.
It's now you got to build custom boards to hold the FPGA, you know, that
right.
It snowballs. And all of a sudden you start going, Xeons with, you know, enough programmability to do...
Just about anything.
Well, you know, to do a custom... dedupe engine.
Right.
Right, like SimpliVity
has
a PCIe card that does compression and hash generation and a lot of the dedupe work. And that's a really good idea in the hyperconverged environment because CPU cycles are so expensive.
Right.
Right, every CPU cycle you use to do dedupe
you're not doing
is one, one less VM you can run.
Right.
And so, you know, that you know, going out 5-6 years when that's readily available, starts going, super micro chassis, custom FP. Wow, that gets really interesting.
Yeah. Hadn't thought about that. Hadn't seen that. I'm going to have to take a look at that. We used to use FPGAs with, you know, embedded logic modules and stuff like that for processing and other stuff that were available from Altera and stuff like that.
It was Altera that Intel bought.
No kidding. Oh.
Yeah,
you're talking a major vendor.
So, right, big FPGA vendor.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So that gets really interesting.
Right. Well, let's, you know, let's start talking a little bit more capable hardware capabilities than we had before. So that's if they start embedding a Xeon in an Altera FPGA, well, we're talking some interesting stuff here.
Right. Now, you know, clearly it's still for embedded systems.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's not field programmable by any end user customer.
Right.
But it still opens the door for, we're not going to do any hardware development, but we're going to have cool stuff anyway.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that runs exactly counter to the, and we're just going to distribute it as software.
Right.
Software defined, like cloud being a term that means whatever the guy saying it wants it to mean. I try and...
Yeah. Okay.
Well, when I got the press release from NetApp, that said that the NetApp V series, which is the FAS head to use with your disks,
right,
was software defined.
Well, I mean, technically it's a software function on top of FAS, but you have to buy a FAS to get it. You know, it's not like
it's a box.
Yeah.
It's an appliance you buy that, you know, it is no more software defined than if I bought it with NetApp disk chips.
Now, speaking of NetApp, they do have this ONTAP Edge stuff and Cloud ONTAP,
which are software defined,
right?
Yes.
But they don't involve a FAS box.
Right. Yeah. But when that press release hit me, I decided I'm going to use the term software delivered.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable term. If they can deliver it with a download.
For it comes on a flash drive or a download and you put it on your hardware.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people use software defined to mean that.
Right. Okay.
But other people use software defined to mean more. And so it's like, okay.
Yeah.
But software delivered is really interesting. You know, you look at the SolidFire's Element X.
Right.
Where SolidFire is selling to big solution providers.
They've got the hardware smarts to do whatever they want. Yeah.
These guys buy servers from Taiwan by the container.
Yeah.
And so if I've got 150,000 of this model Quanta server on the floor, I really want my storage to run on those, not on the Dell servers you decided to OEM.
Right.
And so, you know, Isilon starting to do that, CleverSafe starting to do that.
Under IBM, they're releasing their software version again. That's kind of interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
They never strictly released it. You know,
before,
it was one of those.
Yeah,
it was one of those. You could buy it that way, but we have to talk about it. And it's interesting, you know, that it's CleverSafe division of IBM who doesn't make servers anymore.
Right.
That, you know, frees them, because if they hadn't sold the server division to Lenovo,
they'd probably be doing their own box, right?
Well, then there'd be six guys going, well, you know, this is an opportunity for us to sell more X series servers. Yeah, what we really need to do is customize the software so it takes advantage of, you know, those four LEDs we put on the motherboard so you can tell which DIMM has failed.
You're saying IBM has made the right decision there, I guess, to get out of the server business? Yeah.
You know,
obviously, there are pluses and minuses there, but it's long term, it's probably the right decision.
The margins were failing.
Yes.
And IBM's really a services company that makes hardware to support the services more than they are a hardware company anymore.
And you think they make software to support the services?
Well, I think that, you know, if we talk about CleverSafe,
Yeah.
I think they, you know, they have CleverSafe.
Right.
Because CleverSafe was really successful at the petabyte scale
object store.
And if you're putting in a petabyte scale object store and you're corporate America, not a solution provider who has four PhDs to do it, there's a lot of professional services that go with that.
Yep.
And that's perfect for IBM.
Yeah. I agree.
Remember, I was a Big Four consultant. It's like, oh, look, after work. what's a project that's going to require a lot of time?
Yeah.
And in the old days, that was things like, you know, we'll set up HP OpenView to manage your network. That'll take 10 guys 2 years.
And it still takes 10 guys 2 years.
Yeah, and we get to bill for every minute
of it. Gosh. So, yeah, All Flash is still hopping along, and we talked about before the call about the flash disk cutover, when that's going to be, and stuff like that.
Yeah, I am of the opinion that unless you're buying storage for a specific sequential workload, then flash is really important.
Yeah. Some amount of flash, regardless. I think there's no case where you wouldn't have some flash in a storage array anymore. Maybe video surveillance.
Streaming video surveillance, backup target.
Right.
You know, but we're talking about edge cases.
Yeah.
Or performance doesn't matter, kind of archival.
Right.
But if you have any applications that are doing 32K or smaller IOs in anything that looks random. You want flash.
Yeah, it's just a question of how much and how you use it, really.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm really getting annoyed at the flash is cheaper than disk argument.
The crossover, all that stuff on a gigabyte, dollar per gigabyte basis.
We have reached the crossover point versus 10 and 15K RPM disks.
Yeah.
But 10 and 15K RPM disks as opposed to 7200 RPM disks are for doing those small IOs that we should be doing from flash.
Anyways, yeah.
And I would rather have a system that was 30% flash and 7200 RPM disks.
Yeah, 70%, 7200 RPM disks, yeah.
Than one that was 10% flash and 15K RPM disks.
Yeah.
I'd rather have more flash and bulk storage
than
a middle tier.
Right. So I've been doing a lot of research lately on SMR and stuff like that, because now both HGST and Seagate have announced SMR drives, an 8 terabyte and a 10 terabyte, respectively. I'm thinking that that's going to start making a big inroad in some of these hybrid storage. I mean, technically it's an archive storage. It's a sequential-only disk to a large extent. But
right. I mean, basically, if you write less than a whole zone, which is going to be gigabytes.
Yeah. Maybe terabytes. A 10 terabyte device.
Well, a 10 terabyte device is 20 surfaces.
Yeah.
10 surfaces. Yeah. It's 5 platters.
Yeah.
And each surface is going to be 5 to 20 zones.
You think it's 5 surfaces? 10 surfaces, 5 platters? The 10 terabytes? So it's a terabyte? No. I don't know. I don't think so.
I'm within one platter.
Okay.
It could be 6.
Okay.
Right.
Plus,
but,
minus
you know,
one.
Well, and then you're talking about, you know, is, and that one platter is the helium advantage.
Right.
Is because we've got lower resistance and higher thermal conductivity in helium, I can put them a little bit closer together and get one more platter in. But that's really what helium buys you, is that one more platter. So, you know, I figure a disk has got to be like 20 to 100 to hundreds of zones.
Right.
So if it's a 10 terabyte disk and it's 100 zones, it's 100 gigabyte zone.
Per zone,
Now that works great. The more zones,
the more random-like you can actually access it and stuff like that. Yeah, it starts looking more like a disk the more zones you have.
But the more zones, the less capacity.
Yeah, because you've got the band gap and all that stuff. Yeah.
Right, because you have to not shingle at the zone boundaries.
Right.
So if you have 10,000 zones,
you're screwed.
then you're getting 15% more storage capacity, and it's not worth the performance hit.
Yeah. You know, so where I was going with this, I think SMR can, a hybrid storage with SMR disks and flash as the two tiers, starts to make a little bit of sense to me. But you have to restructure your back-end storage to be log structured file. And we know a lot of vendors to do log structured file already.
Well, most people are doing log structured files, file systems to support flash.
Yeah.
But, you know, if the advantage of a log structured file system on a spinning disk is that we always do a full RAID stripe write.
Yeah.
And a zone is even 10 gigabytes.
Right.
And I'm doing 14 plus 2.
Right.
One stripe is 120 gigabytes.
Yeah.
That's a big ass log.
Yeah. But, you know, it doesn't have to be 14 plus 2 or 12 plus 2. It could be 5 plus 1 and stuff like that.
But I'm looking for efficiency. You know, and I am plus 2 because those big drives, single parity rebuild times, I'm not happy, you know.
Yeah.
I might want to go to plus 3, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
You know, so that means we start building a system where there's a memory log to write to the flash, and then there's a bigger log on flash
to
write to the disk.
Yeah.
I can see it working, but I'm not sure it's worth the effort.
Yeah. Well, here's the rub.
The capacity boost from SMR disks, that 30%.
Yeah.
Might not be worth it. You know, if it was twice as much, that's a different story.
Here's the rub, though. All disks will be SMR. I mean, bit pattern media.
10 years from now.
Not even 10 years from now. We're not talking that far off. Where SMR will be the prominent. Disc.
Well, Hammer and bit pattern media don't require SMR. They can be bit pattern media and SMR are mutually exclusive.
No, I don't agree. I don't agree. I think bit pattern media and SMR can be you will have bit pattern media with SMR.
You can't. I don't think you can write a shingled pattern.
I
don't think you can lithograph a shingled pattern.
Well, you're not lithograph. You're lithographing.
No, but
bit
that's
patterns.
How you bit. Yeah, that's how you put the bit.
You're writing overlapping multiple bands or multiple tracks at a time. I'll send you a web presentation I saw today that talks about.
Yeah, I mean, when you say that, you know, you can only write 3 bits wide.
Yeah.
But, you know, my problem with the flash is cheaper than disk people is, you know, first of all, the difference is at least 15 to 1 for an 8 terabyte hard drive.
Right.
To an SSD.
Yeah.
And bigger SSDs are not cheaper per gigabyte.
Right. They just add more stuff and cost
more. But I saw one guy arguing that, well, you know, somebody at
SSD.
Flash Memory Summit pre-announced a 16 terabyte SSD.
Yeah.
And assuming that was an available product, it would be cheaper.
Mm.
And so I went and I looked and the 4 terabyte SSDs cost twice as much as the 2 terabyte SSDs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
so you're not getting
scale.
What you're getting there is
denser storage, maybe. Yeah, you know, not even denser storage.
You're saving the array slot, which is an expensive thing.
Yeah, yeah. So there's some expense,
some advantage, but you know, an array slot costs a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, an array slot and a hard drive,
right,
cost about the same. The array slot costs a little bit more.
Yeah.
But that 4 terabyte SSD is $6,000.
Right, right, right.
So you're not saving enough to matter.
Right.
The other problem I have is people go, well, you can do data reduction on flash.
Yeah, you can do data reduction anywhere, actually.
but there's a performance penalty for deduplication on spinning disk,
right,
that is unacceptable.
Mm.
But compression on spinning disk actually improves performance, doesn't reduce performance.
Yes, yes.
And half the benefit of data reduction comes from compression, not from deduplication.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless we're in special cases like VDI.
Right. Right.
So factor that in on the disk side. Now tell me your flash is as cheap as disk.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Your cheap flash is as cheap as his expensive disk.
Right.
You know?
Right, right.
Big deal.
Yeah, nonetheless, a lot of the vendors are going all flash. I mean, every vendor I know has announced an all flash version of their storage. It's like
except
all flash FAS, VSPF for HDS. It's
well, why not?
Yeah, yeah.
And in fact, Nimble's the only vendor that hasn't done it.
Yeah.
And when we were at Storage Field Day, after the presentation, I went and talked to Dan Lynch,
right,
who's their VP of marketing. And I said, Dan, why are you guys taking so long? You're leaving money on the table. And he gave me the usual story about how they want to make it special and do something right. And I kind of believe that.
Yeah.
But I also think if they just did what NetApp did with Ingenio.
Right, right.
And took the spinning disks out and put flash drives in.
Right.
There is a certain customer segment who is saying, I'm buying an all-flash array because last time, 5 years ago, I bought a VMAX.
Right, right.
And
hybrid.
I bought that VMAX for performance, not for the RAS
right
that a VMAX really delivers,
yeah,
which is a common thing.
Right.
And that meant I spent $4 million on that VMAX.
My kind of guys.
Which means now I have a $4 million budget to replace the VMAX because that's how corporate America works.
Yeah, yeah. It's not going to go down.
And for that money, I can afford an all-flash array.
Yeah.
So whether my applications need all-flash or not, I want an all-flash array.
Right, right.
I only need 100,000 IOPS.
You're good.
But I want an all-flash array because I can have an all-flash array and because as a storage manager in corporate America,
right,
the all-flash array will reduce the number of times my phone rings with people saying the storage is slow.
Yeah,
and I hate when my phone rings.
Yeah, considerably, yes,
I understand
that.
So just for phone ringing reduction, I'm going with the all-flash system because it's in the budget.
Yeah.
Because we don't do zero-based budgeting.
And now those guys that don't do all-flash are screwed.
Now Nimble, who can deliver the 100,000 IOPS.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't get on the RFP because it's for an all-flash array.
Right, right, right.
And I told Dan I didn't understand that. And he said, yeah, I know we're leaving money on the table. You know,
this is where
all I can hope is that when Nimble actually does their all-flash, it's killer.
Yeah,
we'll see. And I can go to Dan and go, all right.
It was worth the wait.
I still would have done the other thing as an intermediate step. But yeah, this is cool.
Right, 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 right. Well, the other thing that's coming out these days is this 3D TLC and all that stuff. So I think we've had some discussions on that.
Yeah, I find that really amusing. You know, first of all, let me be clear. 3D TLC is what we're going to be using for SSDs for the next 5 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That
absolutely.
From now till 2021, 22, 23... 3D TLC is going to be cheaper than any of the next generation
memories
products.
Yeah.
And 3D TLC is going to work fine. Because going 3D made the cells bigger, which made TLC reasonable.
Reliability-wise, all that stuff.
The controller chips have gotten so much better.
The Moore's Law thing.
Today's planar flash, you know, the flash from everybody but Samsung.
Right.
Is in every way but price way crappier than the 23 nanometer stuff we bought a couple of years ago or the 34 nanometer stuff we bought a couple of years before that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's less reliable. It's got higher error rates. It's not as fast.
Stinks.
But it's
raw.
Cheaper.
Raw stinks, yeah. But
today's flash controllers have so much smarts and such good ECC that you can get better results from that crappy flash with today's controller than you could get from the much better flash a couple of years ago
with
the controllers of the day. So I'm all for 3D TLC. I just find it really, you know, the fifth press release I get from a vendor that says we are the first vendor to introduce 3D TLC. Is amusing.
Yeah.
It's even more amusing when you realize that only Samsung is producing 3D TLC in volume.
Yeah.
And Samsung is only selling it to their captive SSD division.
Right, right.
So the only way that Dell or Camonario
or any of these guys,
or 3PAR are getting it is they're buying at Samsung SSDs.
Mm. Is 3PAR shipping TLC?
They're one of those press releases.
No kidding. Oh,
that said they're
doing
TLC.
I forecast that nobody would show up with TLC before the end of the year. I'm dead now. Okay.
Dell didn't count?
Well, Dell would count. 3PAR would certainly count. I was talking major vendors. Camonero didn't count, and the other startups didn't count. But HP, 3PAR, they count.
Yeah, Dell and HP have both made that announcement.
Oh, God. I'll have to go back. I'm dead now. I've lost the contest.
That's oh, well.
Two out of, well, one down, two to go. Oh, schlitz. Yeah, so I think TLC now makes a lot of sense for a multi-tier flash storage system with TLC and MLC. And, you know, and if you want to have, if you want to do archive disks, maybe TLC makes sense too. I mean, it's just got a lot of nice capability.
Yeah. Look, it's more cost effective and it's good enough.
Yeah.
And frankly, I'm hoping over the next few years, we start to accept good enough more. Because I don't have a problem at all with flash endurance. Because it's entirely predictable.
Yeah.
That flash controller can report back to the system controller on an hourly basis. I have this percentage of my life left.
Yeah.
And if a vendor decided, I'm going to over-provision my SSDs less, and I'll just replace them when they fail.
Yeah.
But I'll do it proactively, and I'll replace them before when they're about to fail, which we know.
With certainty, almost.
Right. If you're going to say, I will FedEx this out at least a month before the device that it replaces fails, automatically, proactively, part of the nightly ET phone home is this date, then you could save 15 or 20% on your flash costs by just over-provisioning less.
Right.
Because today,
there's a lot of over-positioning to handle the endurance problems,
The system designer is going, I'm speccing these SSDs to last the life of the system for the 99th percentile user.
Yeah. These things are spec.
If I say I'm going to spec it to the 93rd percentile user, I'm going to save a lot because you know, it's a hockey stick curve.
Right. These things are spec'd at drive writes per day. So, I mean, I was looking at some of the specs that's on the order. Anywhere from 35 drive writes per day down to 4 or 5 drive writes per day.
Oh, I've seen like point.
Well, maybe I'm looking at the wrong stuff, maybe. But
well,
I understand. Yeah.
So SanDisk specifically has a line of SSDs for the large web scale guys.
And it's 0.4?
The product manager on it told me there are 12 potential customers for this product.
God.
Which clearly means they expect to sell trailer loads to the 5 of those 12 who decide to buy it. But it's the same, you know, there's one hardware SKU.
Right.
And Avnet programs the controller to one of five levels of over-provisioning.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's just a firmware thing.
Right, just that soft.
Yeah. And, you know, eventually this is going to be a field thing. You know, eventually, you know.
You think Avnet can do it, but the field can't? It's a fine line there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, SanDisk set it up, and so the software you need to do it is only at two or three distributors, and, you know, and you can only do it once. Yeah. But it's not far to imagine that this is software that's available to anybody who signs enough NDAs and buys 1,000 drives.
100,000, whatever it costs. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that you can do it dynamically.
Right.
That you can say, okay, you used to be highly over-provisioned because I was using you for this application. Now you're mostly used up, but I'm going to use you for the video surveillance, and there's going to be one drive write per month. So switch to the really unprovisioned. We're only going to write to you 12 more times anyway.
Yeah. Ooh, I don't know. it's a step in the right direction. You know, yeah.
If I expect to write 12 times, I'm going to tune it down to the good for 100, not to the 12, but still.
Well, gosh, Howard, we've almost run across our time limit here.
Well, it's been fun.
Was there any last items you want to cover?
You know, the last thing is 3D Crosspoint.
Yeah, 3D Crosspoint.
Which was one of your analyst poll questions. And, you know, so 3D Crosspoint looks like it's going to be the first of the next generation memories to have the density and the cost make sense. You know, at the Flash Memory Summit, I keep seeing STT RAM, 64 gig per chip.
Yeah, it's not there. Yeah, no.
It's like, that's not even DRAM density yet. You know, you got to get, 64 meg per chip.
Right.
It's like, you got to get to DRAM density.
Right. But 3D Crosspoint is almost, well, let's see, 10 times the density of DRAM. It's 1,000 times the performance and reliability of Flash. And I think that was probably MLC, but, you know, whatever.
But when you start talking 1,000 times Flash, you start talking about endurance not an issue.
Right. Especially with today's controllers and stuff like that.
The real question is, what's it going to cost?
That is the question.
And of course, when it first comes out, it's going to be relatively expensive.
So there's a time demand there.
So the first price point that's important is 5 times the cost of Flash. Because that's what an NVDIMM costs.
Right.
So if you can start saying, I can make these NVDIMMs, and I can make them not require BIOS support like current NVDIMMs do. Because they don't have to react to the power failure, and I don't need to have the capacity.
All that other stuff,
All that other, you know, it's simpler. Right. And so NVDIMMs today cost about 3 to 4 times
Flash.
What DRAM costs. And so if 3D Crosspoint can let you build that DIMM at twice that cost, but 4 times that density.
Right.
Then it starts being useful for those NVRAM applications.
Yeah, there's plenty of those in this storage industry, all over the place.
And then 2 years later, when it's come down by a factor of 2 to 4 by comparison to the other media, now it becomes the caching tier, and 3D Flash becomes the capacity tier, and SMR becomes the archive tier.
There you go. I think we have a storage product. We just need to have the product's pricing at the right level.
How long has it been since you designed one?
10 years. Well, maybe it's time.
Okay, it's like 25 for me.
Maybe it's time. I don't know.
So, yeah, you and I are in the position of, we can do the 50,000-foot design.
Then
it's like, that's as far as I want to go.
And then leave it to somebody else.
I'm not even calling it architecture. It's civic planning. It's like one step up from architecture. It's like,
so, you know, I had all sorts of analysis where this price was going to be. I read a report in Forbes or something like that that said Intel is going to be very aggressive on pricing. It's going to, they believe it's going to replace over time DRAM. What? DRAM? I don't think so. But that's their view of the world.
Well, things get really interesting when bit addressable non-volatile memory performs half as fast as DRAM and costs about the same as
DRAM. This
thing
is extremely close to DRAM performance.
It might be 3D XPoint. It might be whatever. You know, there's 12 other technologies competing. But right, when I was in college, we had a 360/65.
Nice machine.
And it had 2 megabytes of core and 4 megabytes of LCS, large core storage, which was literally larger cores. But the larger cores were slower. Okay. They were cheaper because it took less handwork. No. It was wiring.
Yeah. You got my core back there someplace?
Yeah, you got your core.
What is this?
This is 256 bytes of core.
God. Howard, you have everything in this shop.
Lying around here someplace.
Is there a 360 65 back there someplace? No, it'd take up space.
No.
And power.
One of the best things I ever saw, and I would build it if I could, a friend of mine at Columbia University, when they took the 370 out, it had been there long enough the resale market was gone. And he took the main console and took the guts out. Right? You remember a 370 main console
lights
is like
all over the place.
4 feet high and 8 feet long. And he took all the guts out and he put LEDs in where all the neon bulbs used to be and put random flashers on it. And you remember the front was hinged?
Yeah, yeah.
He put a bar in it. That was the coat rack in his office. It was brilliant. If I could find the chassis of, any old it's got to be old before rack mounts. So even, it could be a VAX 780, but the PDP 11, most of the PDP 11s were rack mount modules. I would build that in a minute.
So back to the 3DX. Yeah. So 3DX is coming. The question is, what's the price and how that price curve?
Well, and the price determines the usage.
I agree.
There's several places
in the storage world,
in the architecture of a storage system where that kind of memory fits. And the question is just, for each of those uses to be the landing cache, it has to be this cheap. To be the next tier down, it's got to be cheaper. Yeah. And the really interesting part is when you start writing applications to take advantage of the fact that you have non-volatile main memory.
Right. So my understanding is for 3DX, there is the DIMM bus proprietary changes required. There's BIOS changes that are required.
Yeah, but remember who's driving
Intel
this.
Intel and Micron. Intel being the player.
Right, so Intel, who makes the chipset that the DIMM socket changes need to be implemented in. So, there's BIOS updates, which I'm sure Intel will distribute free for any, for AMI or Phoenix to include in any server vendor who wants it. So, it's like, it's going to require changes.
But it can be done.
But those changes are going to go a lot faster than for NVDIMMs or for Diablos.
Or somebody else. Yeah.
Diablo's got Super Micro and IBM on selected models have the BIOS upgrade.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah. When you're Intel, you can do a lot bigger things and make it happen.
Look, you have leverage over Super Micro and Quanta and Dell and Lenovo.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's about it, Howard. That's the last thing I wanted to talk about. Was there
sounds good to me.
Okay. We do these things once a year at least. We may do them more often, but at this point, I think we're going to sign off for now. Howard, have a good new year, and we'll see you in the next year, I'm sure.
And as I usually say this time of year, a happy Christmas to all and to all a good night.
Okay.